The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week at Are We Lucky is Yancey Roy, who has the best first name in all organized journalism. He's the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome, Yancey.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Okay, let's talk about a whole bunch of things on the Capital Connection this week. Let's talk about the state budget. Everybody says a state budget, and then they begin to, So as we sit here today, the budget negotiations continue, but it looks like the budget won't be on time. How come? I thought we had all of that straightened out. What's the latest from the Capitol?
Well, there's no way it's going to be done on April 1, which is the start of New York's fiscal year. So technically, Governor Kathy Hochul's first budget will be late, although not, so late. I mean, what they're talking about right now is maybe passing it at the beginning of next week, Monday or so. So a few days late, and if no payrolls are missed or no emergency spending authorizations have to happen to keep government running, I think they can probably call that timely. But why did it go past the budget deadline? Well, there is plenty of money. New York State is flush with cash thanks to the federal government. Pandemic aid and the fact that the economy's picked up a lot faster than last year's projections were in the budget. So there's lots of money, but it's not so much the normal operations of like how much you want to spend on schools or roads and those sorts of things that are kind of holding it up. It's all these other issues that have come into play, especially criminal justice, especially Buffalo Bills Stadium, help for Buffalo Bills Stadium, a proposal to speed up the authorization of casinos downstate, and some other things. So that's kind of what's held up things in large respect and why they're not going to quite make the April 1 deadline.
So let me ask you this. You got a Democratic governor, you've got a Democratic assembly, you got a Democratic Senate. How come, they can't get a budget done on time? That's disgraceful.
Well, this is Governor Kathy Hochul's first budget, and I think that, I think that maybe if you're looking at making April 1 deadline, I think that maybe they look to not quite tie down enough details ahead of time of April 1 to get it done. I mean, if you're going to make it for April 1, you really have to pretty much lock down the budget by, March 28th or so. And then have the legislators be able to look at it and vote on it. And some of the serious talks to try to nail down details didn't really occur until the middle of this week. And so that's sort of why you're going to float past April 1.
Well, I don't really understand. I mean, you got a Democratic governor. Apparently, she's a little bit more conservative than some people in the legislature. Am I misassessing that?
No, you're correct. And there's some proposals in there that have upset certainly the progressive wing of the Democratic Party in either the Senate or the Assembly. She has a proposal to make some more amendments to the state's bail laws, and that's one of them.
Talk about that for a second there, Yancey. There was a bail law passed by both houses of the legislature. She doesn't like it. She's getting a little nervous about that. You want to tell us why?
Well, yeah. The original bail law was passed in 2019, and what it did, just to remind folks, was it eliminated the use of bail for most all misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies. And the argument was that they wanted to prevent situations where a person is arrested on a low-level crime, like a petty theft, and you can't make $500 or $1,000 bail, or $1,000 bail, and then the horror stories of sitting in Rikers Island for a year or 2 years while your case drags and drags and drags on through the system.
Right.
And that was the impetus for it changing. Well, we've got a crime spike in New York. There's a crime spike in a lot of states during the pandemic. But it's caused a backlash about bail, and especially Republican critics saying they want the whole law repealed, which is not going to happen. But they are applying a lot of pressure on the governor. And in fact, there's a lot of Democrats, moderate Democrats, either upstate or in suburbia, who their communities are also calling for a pushback on this. And because of that pressure, and because it's an election year, I think there's a lot of political pressure for Hochul to come up with some sort of tweaks, which she has. She put out a 10-point plan, but it was also put out kind of close to the March 31, April 1 deadline, which is there wasn't enough room to fully vet it through both the Democratic majority in the Assembly and the Senate, which is why the deadline is kind of going out the window. But the headlines of what she wants to change are a few key things. One is to take some gun crimes and lower the number of guns, say, possessed, for that to trigger a charge that a judge can apply bail on. And another controversial one is about repeat offenders. Right now, the proposal is this: if you have multiple charges within, say, an 18-month period, even if none of those individual charges are rise to a high level of crime that makes it bail eligible, if you have multiple charges, then give the leeway to the judge to actually impose bail on a person. And those are some of the highlights right there, and that's what the Democrats are talking about. And I think that that sounds like where a majority of Democrats would be able to support as we sit here talking this morning about this. Everything's still up in the air. And that's what they're looking at adopting, even if the progressive wing of the party doesn't want any changes right now.
Well, there's been a little bit of political harm here, Yancey, in that we've had some elections in which this idea of letting criminals out of jail without keeping them there because of bail, where they allegedly or maybe would commit other crimes, becomes very potent when it comes to elections. And the Republicans are not going to let go of that one.
Oh, sure. Oh, for sure. I mean, look, they used it very effectively in the campaigns in 2021 in local elections around New York State, especially on Long Island, where they were able to win big races for county executive and district attorney. And so they feel like that's a real winning issue for them in a campaign. And so politically, what you're going to see is, even if the Democrats, and as again, it's a Democratic majority in each house of the legislature, even if they agree to some changes about repeat offenders and guns, the Republicans politically will say, of course, that's never enough because it's not a full rollback. And they will continue to hammer it in this year's elections. All the statewide officials are up for election, as are 213 members of the legislature. And the Republicans feel that based on last year, they can use this effectively again this fall.
Well, if that's true, then how likely are the leaders of both houses of the Democratic-led legislature likely to give it up?
Again, I think...
Because if they don't, they're going to lose some more.
Right. I think there's momentum right now, as we're speaking and everything's up in the air. I think there's momentum for a compromise on bail, because I think that there's a majority of Democrats in the Assembly and a majority of Democrats in the Senate who find points, who have found parts of Hochul's plan acceptable. And they, too, want to get something done so they won't be accused of sitting around and doing nothing this year.
One of the things that's going on in America right now is that state legislatures are suspending gasoline taxes because it costs so much to get in a car and fill it up. So what do we need to know? Is this going to go anywhere?
That's got a lot of momentum as well. And I think if you were handicapping this, I think you would say that's probably likely in the state budget. Now, the question has been, what form of tax break would the legislature give consumers? There were two competing ideas. One was a straight-up suspension of the gas tax at the pump. And two is to do like California is pursuing and send a rebate check to every car owner a registered car owner in the state. Now, why you would do that latter, the latter one, is because there's complications with the gas tax and the way it's imposed and collected. It's not like when you go to the pump, it's not like you go buy a, I don't know, a candy bar or a snack at a convenience store and you put it up there on the register and it's a dollar and then they scan it and they say $1.08 because they've applied the tax. When you buy gas, it's already built into the pump price, and that's because the distributors and the wholesalers have paid it up front, and it's passed along to you, and they have to square up with the retailer and that sort of thing. And so it'd be a lot of changes for the system to adjust to the a suspension of the gas tax. And I think some folks were saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't do that. But I think for consumers, I think the easier one to grasp is just take the price off the pump, and whether it's for 6 months, which is sort of what they're talking about, 6 or 7 months through the end of the year. And that's what's got momentum right now. And then the other question you might ask is, how much would that save everyone? Well, the state taxes on gas are about 33 and a half cents right now per gallon, and that's pretty fixed. But then you also have local sales tax, which, depending on your county, runs about 4 cents. So on a $4 per gallon, that's 16 cents. If it goes to $5 a gallon, that's 20 cents. So you're talking in the neighborhood of 50 cents a gallon would be the price reduction you would see if they take it right off the pump.
Are politicians feeling pain from all of this from their constituents?
Well, they won't. Well, they might feel pain in the fall if they do something or
that's
don't.
That's what I'm
do
talking
something.
About. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They just might. I know they're certainly hearing the complaints. Every legislator that you talk to seems to be talking about this, at least certainly upstate and suburbia, where driving is a part of everyday life. And, you know, look, just give credit where credit's due. There's the Republicans in the legislature are the ones who really started banging the drum on this early. And as prices continued to rise at the pump, more and more Democrats have jumped on board. And I think there's a real bipartisan momentum to do something for folks for gas prices.
Hmm. So when it's all said and all done, are we going to be paying less at the pump?
It's very likely, yeah.
But out of $4, we're not talking about all that much.
No, that's the thing. You're right. You're not talking. I mean, if it's, let's say it's 50 cents a gallon, well, you know, and say you have a big tank in your vehicle, instead of 10 gallons costing you $40, you know, it might cost you $35. So it's not going to be a huge reduction, but it'll be a little bit of money in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so many lawmakers and advocates are pushing legislation that would increase pay for workers in the industry, which has thousands of job vacancies. The Fair Pay for Home Care Act would increase the hourly wage to $22.50 in New York City and $19.80 upstate. But the plan under consideration is to implement smaller, quote, step raises over a course of several years, possibly with a one-time bonus payment to encourage workers to stay in the industry. So are we in trouble in terms of home care? There are people I know who can't find anybody to do that work.
You know, certainly it's an issue, and there's been well documented about staffing problems at various places. I think that in terms of where this is going at the Capitol, I think that, as you referred to, I think there is more momentum right now for something along the lines that Governor Hochul proposed, which is gradual increases and also signing bonuses and other sort of incentives to get people in. The issue with some folks want a much larger upfront raise, I think that some of the legislators are thinking that that's too far, too fast in a way, and it's, you know, the state certainly has a surplus of money right now, but the federal money is eventually going to go away from the pandemic. And so I think that there's probably more momentum right now for the gradual approach and the use of bonuses and other kinds of incentives to beef up that workforce.
Let's talk a little bit about Kendra's Law. Now, incidents in which homeless or other individuals with mental health illnesses have committed high-profile crimes have prompted some lawmakers to expand the ability of judges to have someone forced into treatment. Hochul is proposing a change to the statutory standard for involuntary commitment for individuals who pose a danger to themselves through self-neglect. Can you unpack all of that for us?
Sure. It is a complicated issue. And, you know, look, let's start with the name Kendra's Law. It was, I want to say, about 20 years ago when the law was created. And it was out of a terrible incident where a mentally ill person shoved a woman in front of a subway train and she died. And her name was Kendra. And that's where we get Kendra's Law. And the issue is, as you mentioned, is to give some sort of mechanism where you can have more leeway for authorities to get people back into treatment or to take medications when there is an issue about safety. You know, there is opposition from advocates of the mentally ill. They say that the problem is that there's not enough supportive housing right now. And what's going on is they're being scapegoated for behavior that it really is a result of a lack of government services for the mentally ill. And there's points to be made there. I just think that given the increase in crime, there's going to be just a huge pressure, again, on legislators to do something about criminal justice. And right now they are talking about sort of changing or upgrading or whatever word you want to use, and Kendra's Law to give and law enforcement and judges and whatever more authority to basically force people into treatment if they're not, you know, taking their medications and that sort of thing.
You know, Yancey, for years, somebody acted out in the state. The state put them into one of these giant facilities, medical
sure.
facilities. Then we said no to that. That's a lousy idea. And we basically closed them down, put people back out on the streets for the most part. Does any of this signal a return to the way we used to do business?
That's probably going too far. I mean, they're not going to certainly start, you know, what we saw decades ago with, as you mentioned, sort of what folks called warehousing the mentally ill. But there is certainly an issue about housing and support services. And it's a tough balance for legislators to strike because they are hearing from the other side that says that the issue here is lack of services, lack of supportive housing, lack of institutional controls that help people who have mental health issues.
Let's talk a little bit, Yancey Roy, if we can, about ethics, something that seems to elude the people in Albany a lot. And here we're talking about the dismantling of the state's Joint Commission on Public Ethics. And that's something that the lawmakers on all sides agree needs to be done. The dysfunctional panel, they don't get things done, established a decade ago, has taken deep criticism for its apparent protection of the governor, the legislative leaders who appoint the commissioners. Is there any real chance that there will be an incentive for them to make these changes?
There is an incentive for them to blow up what's called the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, JCOPE, as folks call it by the shorthand around the Capitol. And the real incentive there is mostly that was tied to former Governor Andrew Cuomo and much criticized for being too allied with him. And now that he is no longer governor, I think it's been a priority for Governor Hochul and legislators to do something to eliminate JCOPE and come up with some other body. I think they all share that idea that JCOPE has not had a good reputation around the state. For symbolic purposes, it would be good to end it, start with something else. But then that's where you get into the sticky business of, well, okay, how do you create a new independent ethics watchdog? And right now, Governor Hochul has a plan on the table that, among other things, would sort of leave it to designated law schools, law professors. They would have to decide who, but it would be law schools coming up with naming the people who would actually serve on the ethics board. And so there would be no direct appointment by a governor or by a legislator. Now, I don't know that that has much as much momentum in the legislature as some of the other issues. I think that legislators are still pushing to have some sort of say in appointments, and they haven't resolved that right now as we speak. So where there's the will to blow up the old ethics board and start with a new one, the actual way to do it and the details are very much up in the air right now.
But Yancey Roy, we do know that these people in the legislature and the governor's chair, in other words, don't want to be held responsible. So when all the smoke clears here, what do we expect to see?
That one's really foggy right now. There's a lot of smoke on that one. The good government groups, whether it's NYPERG or Reinvent Albany, are trying to really put some sort of public pressure on legislators not to go back to a system where there's direct appointments, where, you know, someone might feel accountable to legislators or a governor, to not do the board that way. But this is one of those issues where it's taking a back seat to some of the other things, whether it's criminal justice, whether it's casinos, whether it's raises and bonuses for healthcare workers and what to do about SUNY. This one is kind of at the back of that list, and I think that's why we don't have a clear idea of how this one will be settled yet.
We have a clear idea that when the smoke clears, they'll have a better deal than if they were dealing with somebody else's ethics. I mean, it's so self-serving. It's disgusting.
You know, I've been around Albany for a long time, and you have too. I can't remember an ethics board that was ever widely praised in New York State government. And there's always like a new iteration. A new governor comes in with a new idea. It's put in for a while. Sooner or later, it gets panned as ineffective or beholden to somebody. It's kind of been a long-running story with whatever name you want to give, but the State Ethics Board, which is supposed to, investigate wrongdoing.
Let's move on, if we may, and let's go to the race for governor. Now, all the polls are showing that Kathy Hochul is way ahead over her competitors, except for former Governor Cuomo, who was 8 points behind Hochul in the latest Siena poll. So, can we expect that he's going to jump into the primary?
I was just going to say, is he running? I didn't know he had declared yet. No, I'm making a joke there. It's interesting that it's the sort of theoretical race if Cuomo jumped in, and Siena finding that asking Democrats, they say that only 8 points, 8 percentage points separates Hochul and Cuomo. But you know what? You have to look at that poll and also notice some other things there. Not just that it says Hochul 38% and Cuomo 30%. If you look at some other things, Governor Cuomo's favorability rating is way underwater. Something like 32% view him favorably, 60% unfavorably. Still roughly two-thirds of the people asked said he did the right thing in resigning. You'd have to ask yourself, okay, this says 30% favor him, Democrats favor him in a matchup that might include Hochul and others. But can he get more than 30%? I don't know. It's a question out there. And second of all, your other question is he running? Well, there's a clock on that right now. He would have to get petitions to run in a Democratic primary or to run as an independent or a third-party candidate. There's a window on when you have to submit those, and it's going to be closing pretty quickly here in the spring. So that makes it, if he was thinking about running, that makes it all the harder to actually pull off right now.
So let's then go jumping to Attorney General Tish James, DA Alvin Bragg, and the prosecution of Donald Trump. What's the latest?
Well, the latest thing that was in the news, the Manhattan DA's office, a couple of the lead investigative attorneys resigned, felt that there wasn't a push to pursue the case. They thought it was a miscarriage of justice, and they resigned as a result.
That was pretty impressive, wasn't it? The two lead prosecutors in the New York City District Attorney's office resign and say, basically, over the fact that the new DA, Alvin Bragg, wasn't really pushing this Trump thing enough.
Right. And now Letitia James, the AG's office, is still pushing the civil portion of this case. There's been a gradual legal development. They're trying to get more documentation. They're trying to get the Trump family to have to testify. There's all sorts of motions, continual fighting back and forth on that. she is certainly pursuing this and not dropping it at all. And, you know, would that create any more pressure for the Manhattan DA to continue the case? I don't know. But she, Tish James, is certainly continuing to push it. And to remind folks what this is generally about, it's about taxes and paying taxes on properties that Trump and the Trump Organization held, and whether they essentially lowered the estimates of property values when it came to paying taxes illegally so as to evade taxes, basically submarining the worth of their property so that they could pay a lower tax rate. That's kind of the crux of what this is
about. But it does seem, Yancey Roy, that the district attorney, Alvin Bragg, is taking sort of a back seat here. People are thinking that when these two lead prosecutors who were on the Trump case quit, that it was a signal that he was being soft.
Yeah, that's certainly the way it came off, for sure. Bragg is a new DA and taking over Cyrus Vance Jr.
Yep.
He's run into some other political headwinds because he has sought to have a different approach to prosecuting crime, where lower level offenses aren't necessarily prosecuted as vigorously or taken to court, and wanting more a holistic approach to justice. And, you know, he's run into a lot of criticism of that. And folks now are wondering if backing up or backing off, rather, a Trump investigation is a sign of, well, the office can only take so much political criticism at a time. And that's part of what the decision is here. But I don't know. There's still a lot to be played out there. He's just in office. We're sitting here at the end of March. He's just been in office 3 months.
But he hasn't distinguished himself popularly. I live in Massachusetts, not New York, but based on what I've been reading, I wouldn't vote for the guy. Anyway, we're out of time. Our guest has been Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alan.